Good evening, Earthlings. It's your human Kypervel Explorer, and this is Psychonautic Psychedelic Podcast. Firstly, I'm going to say that right here in the Shaman Shack, we support freedom of speech and preemptively refuse to adhere to any attempted suppression of that human right. Universal Human Rights Declaration, page 5, article 19. Now that the nitty and gritty is out of the way, tonight my guest is a man of the people, human of the earth, and someone I'm happy to call a friend, here to talk tonight on corruption, destruction, racism, human rights violations, and hopefully, if we have some time, a little bit of his music as well. Please welcome Levi Truth. How are you doing, buddy? Great to have you.
How are you doing? Thank you for having me on, Mitch. Bless you, and it's good to speak to you. Great.
It's been too long. We've taken our time with it anyway.
Be honest, I've been trying to get to Scotland but lockdown has prevented a lot of stuff from happening, so, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've gotten to the point where it's sectional almost, like different counties, different areas are getting put on different standards, and we can't even leave the area if we're put on a certain standard, so it's a bit of a bummer to travel.
Yeah, it is.
So, when I was doing a little bit of background research and seeing what sort of stuff we're going to talk about tonight, one of the main things that really stood out to me was the sort of case that's surrounding you, and the fact that you've been held on remand in prison twice, and it sounds like to me that there's just it's a multiple layer thing. It's just there's always something else getting added on, and I was wondering if you could sort of dive into that a little bit.
Yeah, definitely. Well, the two times I've been held on remand is really important in terms of the way I look at the system, because the first time I got remanded, I'd never been to prison before in my life, so it was a shock to the system. And I would actually, it was a bright sunny day when I was in this sweatbox being driven to the prison, and I thought, it was surreal, I couldn't understand it. And basically, I'd been arrested for a video called War. And so for much of the time when I was in prison, I was fighting the system in terms of making complaints, writing letters, you know, to MPs, I was just on it 24/7, more or less.
Taking like the paperwork, the official route, like using your rights, exercising your rights.
Using my rights. But the mode that I was in mentally was believing that, well, these people have got something wrong. They can't possibly have me in prison here for a YouTube video. You know, I'd go to the library and I'd look at certain books. There's Archbold, which became my friend in prison, and also a book called Banks Sentencing Guidelines. So I was looking at, you know, what I'd supposedly done and saying, well, it says in your law that isn't even imprisonable, so why am I here? Mm-hmm. So there was that stuff, and it took me a while to actually realize that they didn't have me in prison for really making a video. They were using the system, the legal system, to actually silence me and to punish me and to make me acquiesce to saying I was guilty of something that I didn't believe I was guilty of. And just to briefly say, on the second occasion now, I didn't have that that kind of, you know, mental problem of understanding what they were doing. The second time, I knew exactly why they'd lock me up, and I knew exactly that it was about silencing me, sending me a lesson and basically trying to break me. That was what it was really about as well. The breaking of an individual using the prison system. Yeah.
And of course, you're facing in the 7th of December 2021, you're facing what you're worried will be a third remand stint. Can you tell me what is exactly you're being accused of and how that ties in with the first two remands?
Yeah, they're all pretty similar. All of the stuff that I'm getting arrested for constantly is pretty similar. And I'll just go back one second to just say, to understand much of the arrests, it comes back to the family court system. And what I did at the end of the first family case that I had, which ended in end of 2007, well, 2018, I think it was, ended. And they ended by saying that I could have no contact with my children at all, apart from a letter a month. So the very day that I heard that, I went on social media and I did a what they called in court a rant. So that was the first time I got arrested. But on the final, as the case went on in the family court, because I was the one who applied to the family court to see my children. Mm-hmm. And I believe that they were going to look at whether I was a good father or not. They never did. You know, they didn't come around and say, oh, we need to see if you've got facilities for them to stay over and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. None of that. You know, it came to the point where over a period of time, I was seeing corruption. I was making complaints. I was, you know, calling them on corruption. And that was getting me a kind of reputation in family court proceedings as a troublemaker, in a sense. And what they did to try and shut me down was they used a psychologist to say that I had two personality disorders, which conveniently were narcissistic personality disorder and paranoid personality disorder. And I didn't know at the time, but these are very convenient to nullify anybody who's speaking out against the system, because if you're paranoid, then your complaints don't make sense. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the family court proceedings, in the final hearings, I decided I've had enough of this corruption. I'm going to record the hearings. So it was a 4-day final hearing. And
of course, because normally those sorts of cases, unlike most cases of that level legally, family court cases are usually held out of the public eye in private court, aren't they?
Most definitely. And that's the real evil of the whole process, the secrecy. You know, before we went on air now, you said that stuff had been going on for so long, you know, historically, and it's been going on because of secrecy and how these, for want of a better word, I use it a lot, for want of a better word, how these devils portray themselves as wanting open access to stuff like the courts and transparency, but in actual effect, what they want is total secrecy. So when somebody like me speaks out, you know, it becomes like I'm looked at worse than a criminal, put it that way, to them.
Yeah, it's easier for them to control the narrative when they set the narrative.
Definitely. So going back to what I was saying in terms of the last 4 days, the final hearing, which lasted 4 days, I recorded those. And these ravenous devils, as I call them, judges, barristers, they were so eager to get this case just boxed off, get it all signed off, you know, give the order that was going to say, you know, I could only have contact. And by the way, this is for all those people going through the family courts, yeah? Your family court proceedings might take 1, 2, 3, 4 years, but at the very outset, they know what verdict you're going to get. They know the order that's going to be made. And the only reason why it's taking so long is so that everybody can get paid. So, yeah, I recorded, but these venomous devils were so into getting it all finished that they didn't seem to be bothered that I was coming in with two mobile phones every day and placing them on, because you know I thought one might have a problem or the battery might run out or something like that. So I just record, and I recorded the 4 days. And what I did afterwards was, about 2 days later, I reported myself to the police. And I'd like to say this as well, I was kind of like shocked at the things I was recording, you know, the corruption and the things that were being said and the things that were being done in these hearings. So I recorded it, and I went to the police a couple of days after, and I said, rang up the police, and I said that I'd committed a crime. I didn't tell them what moment. When I said I'd committed a crime, their ears pricked up, and they were like, oh, what have you done? I expected me to say, you know, I've got a body under the floor or something. Mm. And when I said, I've recorded family court proceedings, which is a crime, the police were a bit like, okay, well, I'll check what we're going to do. They got back to me and said, well, we're not going to press any charges, but we'll get onto the family court and see if they want to. They got onto the QC, the head of the family court, and she said, translated back to me, that they weren't going to take any action. Now, when I reported them to the police, yeah, I was calling them their bluff, because I knew if they prosecuted me for contempt of court, for recording the proceedings, the very evidence that they were going to use, which was on my phones, was the same evidence that would reveal judges violating the law, fabricating evidence, family court experts fabricating reports, just corruption after corruption on those things. And I knew they weren't going to take action. I was calling their bluff. And if they did take action, I was going to be happy, because I was thinking, well, okay, let's get it on, because, you know, you're going to be exposed. They took no action. So I sat on these recordings for about a year, not doing anything. And then I started my channel, speaking out on what had happened. And must have made about 3 or 4 videos. And I started to get a bit more bold and thought, okay, I'm going to use some of the recordings. And at the time, my intention was to just break down the recordings into little areas and say, okay, this one's about, which is more or less what I've been doing lately, more and more. But the first video I made, like I say, was called War on Fathers. And well, the first video I used the audios in, and they arrested me for it. Now, they didn't charge me with actually recording it, because they knew, again, it would open up a can of worms. So they charged me with the fact that my children's names were mentioned, and that the mother of my children's names were mentioned. That's what they used. So it kind of kept them behind the scenes. So the only witness that was really used against me in those proceedings were the mother of my children, to basically say, yeah, I've been traumatized because my name was heard. And I feel like the children are being exposed to this and exposed to that because their names were heard. But ultimately, she herself, the mother of my children, is just, because she's got her agenda to keep me out of their lives, she plugs very nicely into their system, and she's happy to be used by them, you know, against me, which is more or less what's happening again. So I know it's a long, long-winded way of answering the question, but that is what's going to happen again now. I did a video on the 17th of September, was it? Yeah, because I started a new family proceedings. When I was locked in prison, I just took a chance and said, I'm going to apply to, because the thing is, when you're locked in prison, when you write these letters, they're very, very powerful, because it's like you're in the system and they can't ignore it. That's why they hated me. So I sent this thing off to the courts and said, you know, I'm applying again. And I actually forgot about it when I came out of prison. And lo and behold, the prison got in touch and said, you've got a court date. You know, they were just trying to shut it down again. But they, because of the way the system works, it has to adhere to the paperwork. It's like, it's almost like, you know, they can't ignore the paperwork. They can't ignore the applications. They'll try to delay them or throw you off. But they have so much power. So, yeah, on the 17th, I had another court date. And they sent me to one city, and they had the court hearing in another city, and then threw the case out, claiming that I had turned up and that somebody who looked like me, sounded like me, had turned up, and they believed it was me. And then I'd turned up to the hearing, and then suddenly I disappeared. So they thought, well, this is what the judge said. They thought, oh yeah, he's not interested. We'll throw his application out. Job's finished. But again, what I did is I reported them to the police, and I didn't report them to the police, but I reported the fact that somebody is fraudulently passing themselves off as me. I went to the court and I said, I want the CCTV, and you said that this person signed in, so obviously there's evidence for the police. And this kind of turned everything around, because they were thinking what to do. But on the day of that that fake hearing, where they'd sent me one place and had the hearing another place, I was very pissed off. I've learned over this time not to act, you know, too out of character, because that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, you don't want to let anything show that is bothering you or getting under your skin.
Definitely. But my actions did get me arrested again, because I went out onto the street to play music and also to actually speak to the people. And it's the first time I've actually gone out to intentionally speak to the people. And I was very close to the square called Winkley Square in Preston, where the square is a beautiful park. And around that square is all the barristers, solicitors, all legal people are there. So it's like the power base of the legal fraternity in Preston, well, in Lancashire, actually. So they could actually hear me speaking because I was on the microphone, and you've heard me, you know that can be quite loud.
Yeah, your music and your voice reaches a good couple of streets anyway. I get off the bus in Glasgow and I'm like, oh, my guy's there.
Well, they must have felt absolutely disgusted and terrifying hearing this guy say that they're devils and saying that. And I also said in the video, I'm going to say my children's name. I'm claiming the right to say my children's names. And I also said two judges' names. So they're finally charged me with those two things. However, originally when they arrested me, they charged me with some other nonsense. The charges have changed 3 times now. But again, they've got problems because the fact that they're charging me for mentioning my children's names and actually mentioning judges' names is just opening the door for me to bring the evidence that's going to annihilate them in court. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, when I hear you speak about these sorts of things, the specifics of it, if, like, I've looked into this before our conversation tonight, and when it comes down to things like human rights, like just your basics, your standard universal human rights, yeah, there's quite a few things that stand out to me. Human right, Article 12, Article 19, Article 16, subsection 3. There's quite a few things that just on a standard you're being are being suppressed for yourself and for other people. I was watching one of your videos the other day and I remember you mentioning that you got accused of trying to incite a riot when you were just discussing with other prisoners the existence of their human rights. You were making them aware of their human rights. So in a sense, well, not even in a sense, directly, that itself is a suppression of human right through a government law enforcement body.
Most definitely. And the thing was this, when I was talking about them shipping me out, they basically shipped me out of that prison because they believed I was going to kick off and start a riot. Mm-hmm. Now, it relates to what I said earlier about the two different mentalities I had when I was in prison those 2 times. The first time, because I went to the same prison originally first, but then I was shipped to Liverpool. So it was Preston, HMP Preston I was in. So the second time, they knew me from the first time anyway, and they knew what problems I'd created the first time. Now, when I was writing these letters, the intimidation stemmed from being attacked by prison officers. Well, it stemmed from little nice women coming in, calling me out of one of the classes I was in. Lovely little lady from the religious part of the prison, one of the chaplains, so to speak, who would come in and say, "Oh, you know, could you just stop what you're doing?" And I'd be like, "Stop what I'm doing? What? Well, you're writing letters and you're you do realize that the pen is very powerful. You're making waves, and I think there's going to be repercussions if you keep on writing these letters and making these complaints. You see, the prison service is trying to change, but it can't change as fast as some people like you would like." Ranging to intimidation and bullying by prison officers, attacking you and stuff like this. So the first time I was in, like I said, I was very much firing off, writing to this and writing to that. Had no effect at all. Mm-hmm. And they were not going to let me out, even though I had the right, the human right, to have bail. They didn't let me out. So when I got locked up the second time, I was kind of a bit wiser to prison. And I thought to myself, you're wasting your energy in writing all this stuff. So I just got on with mainly thinking about, okay, you know how the process is going to go. They're going to try and bring you into court every now and then to force you to plead guilty. They're going to intimidate you. They're going to put pressure on you. They're going to mess around with your diet. They're going to get you do anything to, you know, upset you. So, you know, I linked up with a couple of people. We'd go to the gym. And I was just thinking about making the time useful mentally and physically. you know, and I was quite relaxed, to be honest, about it. I knew that, you know, when you book the system in there, they're not going to turn around and say, oh, you know, we've made a mistake, let's let you out, they're not going to do it. Mm-hmm. So I was more very much chilled in a sense. And it was only as time was going on and I had an abscess and they left me in pain for over a week and I snapped, kind of. Mm-hmm. Now, prior to this, you see those films where somebody speaks and they rise the room and stuff like that and people are all on it. I've often thought if I spoke to the prisoners sometime about their human rights, because in terms of basic human rights, what I was kicking off as well about stuff, not kicking off in big terms, but just writing stuff about, is they have no right to open your mail because it's a basic human right, Article 8. Mm-hmm. And they open everybody's mail. You don't get your mail. What you get is a photocopy of your mail. And they say this under the guise that psychoactive drugs are coming in spayed on paper, which is true. But the problem isn't with the prisoners that is coming in. It's with the corrupt solicitors, the corrupt prison staff who are making a lot of money off supplying prisoners with drugs. So there was that basic issue. And I was saying, look, you know, to a lot of people, I were already talking to people on maybe one-to-ones about the rights and stuff like this. But when I had that and my point is, you've seen like rousing speeches and all that. And I always thought to myself, if I ever spoke to these people or tried to, they'd say, oh, go back to your cell, mate. Fuck off. We're not interested. You know what I mean? Mm. I haven't got time for that. You know, because a lot of them are hardcore prisoners and, you know, they don't suffer nonsense easily. And I thought a lot of them would look at it that way.
Mm.
But going through this abscess thing and seeing how they left me in pain when I'm having to beg for stuff. And I actually kicked off in my cell after about a week of being in pain. And I was slamming like the chairs and stuff against the door. And what they did at that point was come and start taunting me through the door. And basically there was only one prison officer and he was, you know, taunting me and saying, no, you're big man, aren't you? You're kicking off on there. And I bet you wouldn't do that if I opened the door. So I told him to open the door and he said, okay, wait a minute. He got off. There wasn't nothing. I didn't hear anything. And all of a sudden he came back and he said, are you ready now, Dowie? Because another thing, I used to hate them calling me by my surname because I'd say, look, no, yeah. I used to talk to people about the fact that if they want us to be looked at as humans, yeah, using our surname and not using our name is a way of just demoralizing us. So if they want to change the prison system, change that. So he came back anyway, started taunting me. Now I was, luckily for me, I was sat kind of on a chair with my head in my hand because of the pain in my head and face, swelled up massively. And because I was in this position, I was able to see when he opened the cell just to the corner that there was a whole crew of them lined up, ready to do me in. And what they do when they're coming to do you in prison is they hide, you know, they hide the key so you can't hear them. So I knew that I didn't hear these people coming down because you become a bit like Spider-Man when you're in prison. And the key sound is one that pricks up your ears because as soon as you hear that key coming, you're thinking, oh, am I getting out? Or is somebody coming? You know, will it be a chance for me to get out of this cell? And you get a little bit demoralized when they walk past and it's not your turn to come out of your hellhole. But so I saw that these people had lined up ready to do me in and they'd used this fact that I was basically in massive amounts of pain. Yeah, my right to have just basic medical care was denied me so that they just could put pressure on me. So it was through these events that little after this, I actually had to do this. I actually had to trade stuff in prison to get medication from other prisoners in order to get medication.
Yeah, just to cope with what you were dealing with.
Say again?
Just to be able to cope with what you were dealing with. Go to that last resort.
Yeah. And that's what prison teaches you to do. You know, you have to do that because there's an economy in there and everything's valuable. Whether it be your trainers, whether it be anything, everything in prison is got some value that you can trade, put it that way. Mm-hmm. So then my anger really did kick in, and I was in the library one day, and it was more like something in me just started talking. And I was as shocked as the prison wardens and everybody in the room were, because what happens in the library section is, it's a kind of congregation area for everybody who's waiting to go back on wing. Say they've been to education, say they've been to work, everybody kind of piles up in there, and it'll be a bit of a short little social for a lot of prisoners. They might not have seen certain people who are on different wings, and it's also a time, you know, to do whatever business you've got to do in terms of passing things to people and doing that. So I was in the library there, and it just came over me to start speaking. And as soon as I started speaking, I was shocked that everybody in the room went silent and started just listening and agreeing with what I was saying. And they started to get really agitated as well. And more or less, maybe a couple of seconds into me speaking, there was a warden who was like saying, "Dowie, no, no." It's almost as if it was a female prison officer. There was other officers as well getting ready, yeah, to go in. But at that time in that library, if it had gone off, there wouldn't have been enough prison officers there. Do you know what I mean? To actually stop it, because there was a lot of people in there. Mm. And it was actually me, because a friend of mine, yeah, I would say a prison friend. It's not somebody I've kept in contact with, but it was somebody that I would consider a friend when I was in prison. But that's how prison is, you know. It goes to me afterwards. He said to me, "Oh, you brought it back down, didn't you? You could have really made it kick off." From that minute, that happened. Right, because it came a bit of a talking point around the prison, and even prison officers were saying they'd never seen anything like it, you know, that I'd been able to speak like that to the people and they were listening. And I did actually bring it down. I did actually see that it was beginning to get rowdy, and you know what I mean? And and after that, so many hardcore prisoners, you know, I'm talking about guys that look like they could eat you for breakfast. Yeah, right. Would come up to me and be like, "Listen, what I've talked to you, I need you to do this for me. I need, you know," and a lot of the stuff they'd be asking me to do is what? Write letters to this, write letters to that. And it'd be everybody from like maybe their girlfriend, but mainly legal stuff they'd want me to write. As soon as this happened, yeah, a process got kicked into place in the prison where I was no longer allowed to go to any activities. Gym was gone, classes were gone. I was locked up for 24/7, which is basically to put you on basic. That's what they call it, basic. Put you on basic. And but even though you're on basic, yeah, you're still supposed to get a little bit of socialization. You're still supposed to get out, and it's only supposed to last a certain time. It didn't with me. They left me 24/7 locked up. Yeah, and then I started getting charges. Yeah. Because in prison, you still can get charged for stuff. And started getting charged with inciting riots and stuff like this. And within a very short time, cell door open, you're leaving, you're getting out, get your stuff together, you're leaving. And I was shipped out to Liverpool. Yeah.
It's a well-thought-out system in a dark, twisted way, anyway. It's a well-functioning, well-corrupted system.
Most definitely.
And for our last 15 minutes, because you said I could get you for an hour. So I'd like to talk, I'd like to just ask you one thing about dealing and processing with all this. Like, obviously, when it comes to creating content for your YouTube video and stuff, and for Facebook, and then your music as well.
Yeah.
Like, all these things compiled in on top of the legal work, on top of your personal life, on top of the general struggle that alienated parents fight through every single day, every single moment. How would you, as an individual that experiences all these things, give the best advice as to deal with these things to other people who are also in the same sort of stick?
You know, I love that question. You know why? Because I know that you're going through stuff. I don't know where you're up to at the moment with it, but I tell you this, what I've learned over, say, the last, definitely since I came out of prison, and maybe started learning it while I was in prison the last time, because I came across a book which was basically written by the same guy as did the Groundhog Day film.
Mm.
And in the book, it was basically said, there was a bit in there that really changed my outlook when I was in prison the second time as well. And it says that man's, I can't remember who did this statement, it's a quote that I used in the book, and he said, man's biggest problem is that he can't sit in one place for any length of time. And because I was locked in this cellar, I turned around, I thought, okay, well, let me start using this cell to empower myself. I started doing stuff like meditation in there, and I started to actually really become empowered in a way, you know, not look at the cell. I used to, I manipulated the system into getting my own cell, which was, I do use the word manipulate because you have to manipulate the system to get what you want in that place.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of advice, what I'd say is this, the family court system and many other systems like it, but in particular the family court system, it works, like we said, in terms of secrecy. But it's a bit like the film Wicker Man, yeah, where this victim, I don't know if you've seen Wicker Man.
Mm-hmm.
This yeah. man has been lured to a system, to an island, for one reason. But the real reason is that he's going to be a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. And they had to do it in a certain way so that he would be, he'd come there of his own free choice, and he would basically give himself over to be the sacrifice. Because mm-hmm. they couldn't take him. Well, the family court system is very much the same. You are lured into there believing that they're going to do good for you. And you, the secrecy enables people to believe that it's a just place, when in fact it's corrupt and it's a ravenous extortion system. So most of the men that are involved in this, women too, definitely, but I think it's important to talk about men because we suffer in a different way and we're being destroyed in a different way. And I think our place in the family and in society is being destroyed in a different way for a specific purpose. But we don't understand that we are giving a lot of power to the thing that's destroying us when we are mentally invested in the family court system, when we are financially investing in the family court system, and when we are believing that it is the family court that's going to empower us to have a good relationship with our children, when it's not. You know, there might be the odd case where that happens, but that's like just doing those so that you still have faith. Because if everybody was coming out of the family court and saying it's vile, then it would soon break to pieces, I hope. But the odd person says, oh, I finally got to see my children. So my advice would be this. Go through the family court system if that's what you want. But you have to operate outside their lies and outside their system and outside their corruption by understanding the law. Speaking to there's a lot of intelligent people who know certain things about the law, empowering yourself. But when you learn the law, you must remember that they always break the law. They always corrupt the law while they expect you to adhere to the law. And it's similar to going into a boxing match where, you know, it's rigged. And no matter what you do, no matter how much you train, you're not going to win. So people need to take their mental energy out of the system and start empowering themselves. And it sounds a bit spiritual and not easy to understand, because I think that everybody has to do it in their own particular way, and I've mentioned a few ways in which I've done it. I can assure you that if I'd not done that, I'd be a broken man now today. Yeah. Mm. And they'd be happy for me to be a broken man. I could even be dead now, you know, because of the things that happened in prison. So, yeah, people have to sort of like, and here's the other important, I call a lot of people brother, yeah? And now people calling people brother is very big in the black community. It's gone back for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But when I call people brother, I've called you that and I've called other people that. I actually do believe, I look at it as brother, because I've got biological brothers or one biological brother. I don't get on with him at all, yeah? But then there's other people who are not biological I get on with very much. And I think that men, yeah, especially men who are going, who are being annihilated by the system have to understand that we are not separate individuals. We are brothers in a fight to stop this corrupt system annihilating our families, our futures, and our mentalities, our bodies, our, you know, we've got to understand that if we're fighting a system, if I'm in a fight in the family courts, that isn't just my fight, it's everybody's fight. Because I can assure you this, which people need to know. These barristers, these solicitors are a brotherhood, no matter where they are. They don't, judges, they don't have to know the other judge. When I went into court last time to plead, they said, you do realize that they brought this up themselves. I thought I was going to mention it, but they said, we do realize that judges are going to be mentioned in this case, and I will know those judges, the judge said. I will know it is because I know them all. And I wasn't surprised. What he was really saying is this. You might try and put a defense after you lose the case that we were biased. That's what he was saying. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, he was low-level snitching on himself because he is biased. He doesn't even have to know those judges to know that he's going to back them up. They protect each other because they're a brotherhood. They're a system. They're all together in it. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't go against each other. You can't get somebody from the family court. You might get the odd person who's talking some nonsense about the family court needs to be a bit more open and stuff like this. But you'll never see a judge doing an interview and blowing up other judges and saying, I know him to have done this, I know this to have done that. Because they've all done the same thing. They're a brotherhood. And we, as people who are being annihilated by the system, especially the men, yeah, who need to become warriors again, the fathers need to become a force to be reckoned with again. They need to unite in some way, shape, or form, or at least have the attitude to begin with that my fight is also your fight. It's vitally important. Do I believe it will happen? I don't know, but it's what I'm working for.
Powerful words, my buddy. Thank you so much for being here. Honestly, I can't thank you enough. And let's not leave it too long next time.
Listen, you're thanking me, but I want to thank you too, because, you know, I knew that I was going to enjoy and I was looking forward to this. I knew there was a bit of, you know, scheduling problems and stuff like that, but I'm really, really happy and thankful as well that it's happened. Blessing, my brother.
You too, buddy. Straight back at you. Arahanai.
Another big thanks again to my guest at Levi Truth. It was a great conversation. If anything that we were talking about tonight in the conversation hit home with you, if you struggle with any of these things yourself, if you support anyone who struggles with these things, then you can check out Levi's YouTube channel with Levi Truth TV as a search, and a lot more information is there. The man is a powerful, strong speaker, very good source of information. So thank you again for that. We'll be back soon with a new guest. Got loads of people lined up, loads of interesting conversations lined up, and I really am excited to get started with that. So tonight you've been listening to the Psychonautic Psychedelic Podcast. You can listen on Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, and Spotify. I also have an Instagram account where I'm mostly active, and most of my updates are, I post my artwork up there and a couple of other things, and you might even see a photo of my dog. So if you're interested in anything like that, it's @psychonautic_psychedelic, and you'll be able to find me on there. In the meantime, drink plenty of water, and thank you so much for joining us.